Please help me welcome our speaker tonight. It's Anthony from the Glenside Big Book Breakdown the Group.
What's going on? My name is Anthony Legato. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got to understand, with me being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, everything I do, say, act, think is a reflection of what I would like the program of Alcoholics Anonymous to be and the people within Alcoholics Anonymous. Standing here, I don't represent myself. I don't represent Anthony, you know, so you guys can sit here and I could tell you for an hour how great my life is and all about me, but I'm a representative of the power of God and the power of Alcoholics Anonymous and what that's been able to do within my life. Because, I mean, my track record really shows that you probably should have a different speaker here tonight. so be it. I find myself in Quakertown, Pennsylvania on a Monday night speaking for an hour about how the power of God and Alcoholics Anonymous is working in and through my life. And for that, the awareness of that is absolutely an incredible feat that I've come to see in my life. Because even in sobriety, I mean, there's been times where I'm not aware of how blessed my life truly is, right? So with that being said, I mean, the beginning is usually a good place to start, right? So, I mean, the beginning of my life, I look at, like, I remember one day I was watching videos from when I was a kid, and people say whether you want to be called, like, I was born an alcoholic or whatever, or I don't really get into that debate too much, but I know from when I was watching, I would watch old home videos, right, from when I was a kid, and I was a happy kid, man, I really was. I remember my parents gave me everything I wanted, needed, and I was grateful for that for a long time, you know. And I would watch these home videos, and I don't know where I came across them, but I came across them, and it was just like me, and I have a little brother, and it was just us playing, man, and we just looked so happy, right? And you know, I come to find out that that's the place I'm trying to get back to today, but I got a little lost along the way. So with that, I mean, we grew up in the Northeast, right? And my parents, I come from a working class family of two loving and caring parents who wanted nothing for the best for their children. And, you know, I shoved that in their face for a long time, you know. So they moved us out of the city. My mom is a Philadelphia school teacher. She's been teaching K-6 special ed her whole life. You know, she's an angel. I mean, I try to like practice the patience that I've seen her, cultivate through her teaching. And because I remember I was a kid, and you know, I don't understand like how really blessed I was to like they moved us out of the city when we were in third grade so that we can have this great life in the suburbs and. And I would go, like, when I was faking sick, you know, like, on the days. My mom was the type that would be like, Mom, like, I don't want to go to school today. Like, I think I'm sick. She'd be like, all right, well, you're coming to school with me anyway. And she was a school teacher, so I had to go to school, like, regardless. And I would see this, right? It would just be, like, these kids, like, I mean, K-6 special ed, like, God bless her soul, man. Because the patience that this woman had, like, it was unbelievable. And I would see these kids just running around all day. And her, like, with this calm scent, like, you know, just calm demeanor. And I could never understand it. You know, and somewhere along the way, like, I don't know, like, I'm fully convinced, and our book talks about it, that alcoholism is a self-imposed crisis or a self-imposed whatever you want to call it. But the choices I've made along this life have led me to where I'm at today, right? Because I was born with this thing or whatever. I mean, that's just giving me an out immediately that it's not my fault. You know, it's not my fault. I was born with this affliction, right? when in reality, I've made choices along the way that are completely and 100% selfish and self-centered in nature that have led me to experience loss of control in my drinking. And with that being said, I mean, I am fully convinced that alcoholism is a self-imposed crisis, and our book talks about that. That's not my idea or my opinion or anything. So, you know, so we move out into the suburbs, and maybe that was a start. I mean, I start feeling this isolation that you hear people talk about so well, you know, in our program, this separation from people, this separation from my family. And I can never really understand it, right? Because I would see people like they would go to these places and it was like, how do like people like talk to each other, you know? And I like couldn't figure it out how people could just interact so freely with each other when I would go to school on a daily basis. And in third, fourth, I could vividly look back in third grade and I was like consumed with this fear of what everybody was thinking about me. I remember like I had this, I guess like reputation or whatever you want to call it as like the funny kid in class. And I would be thinking in my head, like before school, like, oh, somebody said this other kid was funnier than me. I got to come up with more jokes so people will like me more. And this is in third grade, you know? So I could see the beginning stages of alcoholism starting to progress in my life from a very young age. You know, of course I didn't have that awareness when I was in third grade. I was just like, I don't know, like I thought this was what everybody was doing. But you know, looking back, I know that's what, if anything, the steps have done is given me a very clear hindsight as to what the choices I've made have caused certain things in my life. Because I've been able to take responsibility for my actions because of that, which was something I was absolutely incapable of doing from a very young age. I mean, like I said, even going through grade school, I could never take responsibility for any of my actions, nothing. And I really truly believe, like, I got in a lot of trouble, like legal trouble, you know, school trouble, whatever. And I was never able to take responsibility for anything, you know. It was always like getting pulled into the office and, what'd you do this time, man? And I was like, dude, you don't understand now. Like, this kid said something to me and then I retaliated, right? You know, people step on my toes and I retaliate and then I don't like the way other people act. So it was like everything was a big misunderstanding. Like if only you knew, you know, if only you knew how everybody was treating me, then you would really understand. And that was the mindset that I walked through life with, this victim. Like I was a victim of life, you know, and, that mindset that I carried got me in, deep pits of dark depression, really is the place that, And it is a place that I can very well go if I choose to do that today, because I absolutely have an ability to choose that role today if I want to play that victim card, man. Because that's what I did my whole life, you know. I played the victim. I was like, you don't understand. Like, I was in third grade and I had to move to the suburbs. Like, you know, if you knew, I had to make all these new friends. I could, like, I was in third grade, you know, and I remember the first time, it's funny, the first time I did a fourth and a fifth step, like, with a sponsor, I think I was 18, I remember I had that was like a resentment, like a real resentment that I put down on paper, and the silliness of that, like, looking at that in retrospect, like, I really had a resentment at my parents because they moved me out of the suburbs because they wanted a better life for their kid, but in third grade, no. You don't understand how this makes me feel, you know? You know, the insanity of that is really astonishing in retrospect. But it baffles me, like, the insidiousness of all of this. On a daily basis sometimes. But, you know, I found relief from a very young age, you know. And that's what I sought for a very long time, is just relief, because my head became very loud at a very young age. You know, it that's why, like, I have this ability to connect with anybody. I mean, that's affected with alcoholism. I mean, side story, like, the first guy I ever sponsored was, like, 60 years old, man. And I remember I called my sponsor. I was like, yo, Larry, like, what am I going to offer a 60-year-old guy? Like, I don't understand, man. Like, you don't, like, I had these ideas. Like, he's like, all right, man, like, you got to start going out and helping people. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to be the cool guy. I'm just going to help young guys. And, like I have a... like putting terms on God's will again, you know. And then this man walks into my life, and we sit down and have a heart-to-heart conversation and absolutely click and connect over every word that's said in that conversation. And it's like the age difference and all the different experiences that we had, they just crumble from the heart-to-heart conversation of alcoholism that we have. Because me, I understand what's going on in his head, and he understands exactly what's going on or what used to go on in my head, which is an incredible thing to have. Like I said, I mean, back from a very young age, like I said, my head became very, very loud, very loud. And I, you know, in third grade, I'm not really too aware of what's going to give me relief. So the first thing I go to is I get in a lot of trouble, man. I just cause a lot of chaos in life. Like, that was my main goal, was just like, make a name for myself. You know, maybe if I can make a name for myself, then everybody will think I'm like the cool kid or something in school. And that was the insanity that I dealt with on a daily basis in third, fourth, fifth. We're talking fifth, sixth grade, right? And I don't know where that comes from, man, but I know, I mean, this alcoholism, like it says, I mean, many of us probably could have stopped a long time ago, but who really wants to, you know? So by the time I get to this high school or whatever, and I go through, you know, these grade school years, and I'm like continually getting into more and more trouble, and you know, finally I find the relief of alcohol, which is, if you're an alcoholic, man, it was the first thing that ever quieted my head down, and that was cool, man. I really liked that, you know. So I get to this stage or whatever of my drinking. I mean, where I'm having a lot of fun, you know, and. If you're one of those people, like, I don't know, I hear people say, like, if you've never had fun drinking or whatever, I'm like, I feel sorry for you, man, because I had a lot of fun drinking, you know, I really did, like, and it was causing problems from a very young age, you know. I was in and out of institutions from the age of 15, man. 15, I went into my first rehab, because from 15, it became imperative to me that I seek this relief of alcohol on a daily basis, because that was the one thing that was getting me through life. That was the one thing that was making life okay. Life was so unbearable for me at the age of 15 that I sought alcohol on a daily basis. And that's powerful, man, for a guy like me. And I remember I floundered in and out at institutions, rehabs and psych wards and Horsham clinics and stuff of that nature from the age of 15 to 18 for a three-year period. And I vaguely started to sense that my drinking was a little bit different than those who were seemingly drinking okay, you know. Because I remember I would go into an institution at the age of 15, and then I would come out and would go back to school like it was like a cool thing or something. Like, I had this pride behind, like, being this badass kid, like, that I thought I was, because, like, I'm going to a mental ward, you know, and I have to take 6 months off of school, right? And it's insane, you know. I remember having a conversation with a girl in my class, and like my parents, like, they're just baffled at this point. They have absolutely no idea what to do. I'm 15 years old. I'm just one of those people. I just pack my stuff and I leave. Like, that's the type of guy I am, because I don't like the scenario, and I think I'm better off on my own. So my whole story is just riddled time and time again with just me. I see conflict, I pack my bags and I leave. That's what I do. And that's what I saw from a very young age. I mean, my parents and the people around me, they didn't like the way I was drinking. So I packed my bags and I left, because I wanted to drink the way I wanted to drink, you know, and there was absolutely nobody getting in the way of that. And that's what I did time and time again. So. And that's powerful, man, for a guy like me, because that, if you really look at that in retrospect, I mean, I'm getting the amount of relief that I get from alcohol is causing me to literally abandon my family at the age of 15 because of the amount of relief I get from alcohol. That's alcoholism for a guy like me. So that's powerful. I mean, when I look at that, and I look at these, my grand sponsor talks about it time and time again, like these multiple first step experiences that I don't even know that I'm having at the time. But in retrospect, I look at these things, I'm being controlled by alcohol. Like Bill Wilson talks about alcohol being my master. Like, I look at this, and alcohol was my master. From the age of 15, 16, 17 years old, I'm being told what to do, when to do it, and how to do it. And these time and time again, I would get confronted. Like, I would go into these institutions and people would tell me that I need to stop or whatever. I remember I was sitting in a rehab one time, and I kept my mouth shut for like a day. I just didn't say a word. People would come up to me and they would say, "Anthony, what's wrong with you?" And I just wouldn't even answer them because I didn't know. I was just baffled at that point. Like, I didn't know what to do. I was coming to a point in my life where I was, I don't know how old I was, 16, 17 years old or whatever, where I really thought I was insane. But it was weird because, like, I was going to psych wards and I would see people who were like really insane, but I'm like, I'm not like that, but like, I can't stop drinking and I can't stop getting all of this trouble. And like, I don't know what to do, but like, I go to these places and I'm like, I tell them what's wrong with me and I just get bombarded with medication, and that helps, like, I guess for like a little bit, you know. I don't know, like, that's I remember I was like 15, 16 years old, right? And they said, we're gonna put you on, we don't usually do this, but we're gonna put you on Thorazine. We don't really do that for kids under 18 or whatever because of the power of it. And I was like, oh, sounds good to me, you know, let's try it out. You know, and I was like 15, 16 years old, completely content with the fact that these doctors were willing to put me on one of the most powerful antipsychotic drugs to keep me at bay. And I was like, maybe I can just kind of float around in psych wards for the rest of my life and get an unlimited prescription of Xanax and Klonopin and see if we can throw some Thorazine in there. And I'm okay with that, you know. And I am completely okay with that at the age of 15, 16 years old. You know, that is absolutely insane. Insane, you know. You know, so like I said, I'm floundering around through all these places, and these people are just telling me that, like, I would go to these doctors and stuff and a psychiatrist, and I'm telling them, like, they're like, you can't drink anymore, like, that's what's causing all this trouble, Aunt. Like, you got to stop drinking and doing all this other stuff. I'm like, you don't understand, like, you don't understand what goes on in my head when I stop drinking, right? When I stop drinking, my head becomes so loud that the idea of sobriety is absolutely insane to me. It's insane that I will seek the drink no matter what, and I will run over anybody in my path, you know. And because of that, I mean, that because of how strong that obsession has become in my life, I completely run over anyone and anyone that tries to stop me or halt me in my path, because that's how much relief alcohol gives a guy like me. That's how much relief I get, that I am willing to completely bulldoze over anybody that has ever loved me in my life because I am getting that much relief from alcohol, you know? And then I remember I do these things, and like the shame and guilt that would come from the time and time again from these things I was doing, because I'm not really like that insane. Like, I'm aware of what I'm doing is insane, you know? I'm aware that sneaking into these places and stealing money from people and just robbing people all the time, like, I'm vaguely aware that this isn't right, you know? Something's off here. But, you know, the insanity of sobriety would strike me. I would wake up, you know, I'd wake up with the horrible problem. I mean, Bill talks about it the greatest. Those insidious four horsemen were just on me. And the only answer was get loaded, man. And I quickly found myself in that oblivion stage of drinking at a very young age, where that's what I thought. Well, that's what I sought out. I sought out oblivion on a daily basis because the fact of life and sobriety was absolutely unbearable to me, that I could not even deal with these things that I was doing anymore. So I just sought oblivion. That's the only time that I would seek relief or find any type of peace and ease and comfort in this world is when I was in complete oblivion to everything that it was around me. Because I remember, like, there would be times towards the end where, like, I would get physically loaded past the point that I could ever get physically loaded, like, on the brink of death. And you know, I'm walking down the street and my mind's still racing 100 miles an hour. And that scared me to death because the one thing that was giving me relief stopped working. I was like, what do I do now, man? A guy like me, I kind of did what Bill did, and he started mixing like gin and sedatives together. Like, I kind of got into that a little bit, and even that, like, nothing started working at the end. Everything backfired on me, man. So 15 through 18, you know, I find myself floundering in and out of these institutions, and I make my escape down to South Florida, right? But so many people seem to do nowadays, you know. I made my escape south. I remember, like, you present that to, like, an alcoholic. Like, yeah, we got this rehab for you down in sunny South Florida. You got the gym and the pool all day. Sign me up, man. I'm gone, you know. And, of course, that's what I did. I'm like, maybe Florida. Maybe I can just, like, go live in Miami on South Beach or something and just, like, I don't know, open a business or something. I couldn't even hold a job at that point. I'm thinking about opening multi-million-dollar businesses. Insane, you know. So I remember I went down to this rehab, and I would sit. You know, I did the first meeting I ever went to. I was 15 years old, and I remember a guy came up to me and like gave me a hug after, and I was like, "That's the last time I'll ever be in that place." You know, you fucking weirdos. you know, so I like, and I remember I went down to this rehab, and I don't know. I did what I did. Like I said, I was in and out of rehabs from the age of 15, man. I know how to rehab really well. I know how to institution really well. And that was, you know, what was the difference this time? There was none. You know, from the, like I said, like I became very accustomed to the institution life, institutionalized, whatever you want to call it. For the better part of my adolescent years, I mean, I was in institutions. So I became completely accustomed to getting 3 meals a day. I don't have to do anything. You know, I get loaded up with a bunch of great meds, and you guys say I'm doing great. All right, cool. You know, sign me up. I'll do that in South Florida. You know, just on the beach now. And that's what, you know, that was my intentions. Like, I had absolutely no intentions of going down there and getting sober. I just wanted to escape. You know, I work with like a lot of young guys, and I remember I've gotten that call a couple times. Like, yo, I don't seem like it's working up here. I think I'm going to go try it in South Florida, you know. Like, all right, dude, you know, give you a shot. Give me a call. If it works out, it's great. I don't know. Whatever. But so I go down there, and it's like a six-month program or whatever, and I'm like floundering in and out like I always do, sitting in the back and writing notes to the girls and stuff. And I don't know. Like they said, like, it's so funny, like, looking back in hindsight, like, seeing the pieces of my life's puzzle, I guess, kind of put together. Because I'm in full belief that Alcoholics Anonymous is just a catalyst for the life that God intended me to live from the very start, right? I mean, this was, like, I don't think God's plan was to put me on this earth and experience pain and suffering, right? And cause me to completely destroy the lives of people around me my entire life. I'm pretty sure, you know, that wasn't the plan. I'm not, you know, really, I don't like physically talk to God on a daily basis, you know. I mean, other than prayer and meditation, but I'm pretty sure that wasn't the plan. So like I said, I mean, all Alcoholics Anonymous has enabled me to do is become the man that God intended me to be from the very start. Like I said, I mean, the rules of this place, it was like, in order for you to go out, outside of the grounds of the rehab, you had to get a sponsor, you had to like go to some meetings. And like, that's what like all the people were doing. I don't know. So I walked up to this guy after the meeting. His name's Rich. I still talk to him. I haven't talked to him in a while. He's a great guy, man. And I walked up to him and I was like, "Yeah, man, like I need a sponsor. You know, I think you can help me out." And he said, "Yeah, of course. I mean, yeah. I mean, lo and behold, I had no idea that this was an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he was carrying a book around with him. I had no idea. I was 18, you know." And that guy said, "Yeah, absolutely, you know." And to this point, I mean, I remember I would become so paralyzed with fear and sobriety that I couldn't understand. I couldn't understand those choices of, you know, it says to die an alcoholic death or to accept spiritual help. Like, to die an alcoholic death is very much an option for me, you know, because I am very aware of the relief alcohol and other substances give me, you know. I don't. What if the spiritual stuff doesn't work, man? That's the constant thought running through my head. What if this other life doesn't work? What if the sobriety thing isn't for me? Maybe it works for you, but not for me, you know? So that's why I think, like I said, I work with a lot of guys, and not all of them stay sober. Some do. But I get hit with this choice, and it's like I don't know what's on the other side. I'm okay. Like, I know how to live the alcoholic lifestyle. I know how to flounder out in and out of institutions. I know how to get money and get this relief through alcohol on a daily basis. Like, I know how to do that. I am okay with that. I have this it's weird, this sick acceptance in living that, you know? Because you get to a point, I mean, I know I did. I got to a point in sobriety, or not in sobriety, in active alcoholism, where I have this with this sick acceptance of this is going to be my life the rest of my life. You know, and I got to that point, like I said, at a young age. And, you know, thank God I did, you know, really. But I got to that point of, you know, my life is going to be a constant merry-go-round of rehabs, institutions, jails, you know, fake apologies to family members. And that's what my life is going to be like for the rest of my life. And I had this it's a really, I'm assuming most of you have probably been there, but this dark, you know, just this walls closing in type feeling of acceptance that brings, you know, because I know what that brings. But so, I mean, you know, back to where I was talking about, this guy says, you know, you got to call me every day and whatever, you know, the whole deal. And so I pick up the phone and I call him like 2 days later, I think, because I was like completely paralyzed and I couldn't even like, I remember like my hands would be like shaking. I had this guy's number on a piece of paper and my hands would be like shaking dialing the phone, you know, because I'm like, well, like, what am I getting into here? You know, I would talk about like all these people would talk about this AA stuff, and I had no idea what it was. Like, I had no idea what it was. I thought I did. I mean, what most people's perception of it is that's a not drinking club. You know, those people just like they like, you know, help each other out and they don't drink a day at a time. I mean, but I had no idea, man. I was an 18-year-old kid, and I called this guy, and he like came over to net. He asked me like, "You got a big book?" I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "Read the doctor's opinion." I'm like, "All right, this makes absolutely no sense," you know. And then he came down, sat down, and read it to me, and I finally had an explanation for what was wrong with me, you know. And that is powerful, man. That is one of the most powerful things that I found, especially in working with other guys. Is that guy came and took time out of his day. Like I said, this man was an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he came and took time out of his day and he sat me down under a palm tree in South Florida, right, and read the doctor's opinion and explained it to me. And I finally had an explanation as to what was wrong with me throughout the years. That's the thing. Like I would do these things, right? I remember my father would sit me down and he would ask me these questions that I didn't have answers to. Like, "Anthony, why are you doing this? Why are you ripping this family apart? Why is it that you just can't stop? Like everybody else in life is going out and they're going to school and they're getting jobs. Why is it that you can't do this?" And the most honest thing I ever said to that man was, "Dad, I really don't know. I have absolutely no idea." But I couldn't convey to this man. I would say, like, you know, to these doctors and stuff, like, you don't understand what happens to me, like, when I drink. Like, everything else just disappears. Like, everything's okay when I do that. Like, these problems that I think I have, I mean, the problems that pile up on life and stuff, they're gone when I drink. They don't exist. And I couldn't explain it to him. You can't explain that to a person that doesn't suffer from alcoholism. But I would have a million and one excuses, you know, like, it would be like, you know, the people you're hanging out with, that's the problem. You know, lo and behold, I was the problem the whole time. You know, and I was just infecting everybody around me. But like I said, I mean, I remember that was read to me. And I finally could account for all these things that I could never account for. You know, all these times I remember I would have these intentions of trying to control it, like, you know, our book talks about it so well. I mean, that's really the most descriptive thing about alcoholism is our big book, and I just try to like live up to that, but I don't even come close. But I mean, that's what I try to do. I mean, I just try to control it, right? I try to control every aspect of it. You know, maybe if I go here, like if I get this job, I'm just not making enough money right now. If I had more money, then I would make more money and spend more money on alcohol. So it was just a constant merry-go-round, just pain and suffering. I couldn't figure it out. And I tried, you know, I tried every equation. I really did. And thank God I did, really. Because, I mean, that brings me from B to C and how it works, right? Probably no human power could relieve our alcoholism. For a guy like me, I had to try every human power. And I had to realize that every human power on this earth is not going to relieve me of my alcoholism. So from that, I get from B to C. But that's a side story. But so, I mean, like I said, I'm down in South Florida, and this guy reads doctor's opinions to me. I'm finally able to account for every single drinking aspect that's ever happened in my life. And, you know, he tells me to get – it's so crazy. Like I said, looking in hindsight, like seeing how the pieces of this puzzle connect, he tells me to go to this house. It's kind of like everybody up here like goes – we're in Quakertown, but everybody like goes to Levittown up here and like down there. Everybody goes to this place called Del Rey, and I was like, I don't know. Like all the girls from the rehab are like going to Del Rey. I want to go there, you know. So I didn't go there, you know. This guy sent me to a place in West Palm Beach, just like run down old hotel. And thank God he did, man. You know, thank God he did, because I got hooked up with. I ended up meeting a guy there from. We moved up to Warrington from Bustleton, and I ended up meeting a guy from Hatboro, and this guy from Hatboro, I ended up living with him. And his buddy was sober at the time, and then his buddy ended up being my sponsor today, you know. And I got hooked up with him because I met this guy in a rehab that I randomly asked one day to be my sponsor because I needed a sponsor to go out and like roam around, and I was like stealing stuff from department. I was like stealing clothes from department stores, and I was crazy. He told me to go to this recovery house, and then I met this guy from Hatboro, and then this guy from Hatboro's friend ended up being my sponsor to this day. Like, how do you pick, like, that's the kind of stuff I look at. I'm like, all right, God, just do whatever you want to do, man. Obviously, I'm not in this one. You know, you got this. But, I meet this guy, and, I go through the process that we go through in the steps and everything. But I never really, I didn't stay sober at the time. I think I was sober for about a year or so. No, just about under a year. Was involved in a relationship, came home, tried to save that. That didn't work out too well, you know. I remember when I moved back, I moved back to this area after about right around a year, 11 months or so. And I got hooked up with my now sponsor. I remember I called him. He's like, all right, you know, he's like, I don't know, whatever you're doing down there, it seems to be great, man, but we're going to go back through the work now and see if you miss anything along the way. I'm like, yeah, all right, calm down a little bit. I'm going to do a 90-90 up here, Larry, you know. He's like, yeah, it's great, I'll do, but we're going to meet, you know, once a week and go back through the work. And I never made it, man. I never made it. I remember I was driving to a meeting one day, and I'll never forget it, man. It was one of the most vivid first step experiences that I have ever had in my life. If I am ever unsure of my ability of whether I have a choice to drink or not, I look back to that day, and I remember I woke up. Like I said, I was like I was dealing with a bunch of stuff that was a direct cause of my selfish behavior, and I come to this point of collision and calamity where I'm absolutely unable to deal with it because I have absolutely no foundation laid out. My AA program looked a little bit like I wake up, you know, I say God, I pray for like, I don't know, 15 seconds on a good day, 20 maybe, and then go to a meeting, and I was just like, I lived in a recovery house, I worked with people in recovery, went to the same meetings with the people we worked with, so I was so, like, and that's powerful, man, it really is. If you're ever a part of that, man, I mean, the fellowship aspect is absolutely powerful, man, it really is, because the people, I was able to keep some level of peace and sanity. Like I said, I had an absolutely incredible experience doing a fourth and fifth step the first time. I remember walking out of that man's house with that levitating feeling or whatever you want to call it. I mean, I've experienced two really different ends of the spectrum of doing a fourth and a fifth step. Like I said, the first time was an absolutely incredible one. And then the most recent one was like, damn, like, I really have a piece of shit. Like, yeah, I'm pretty selfish, I guess, you know. I moved back and I'm driving to a meeting that one day, and the thought comes into my head that, my head, like I said, becomes so loud once again. You know, my head is at max volume once again, and nothing I am doing is calming it down. And I remember I was just like trying to go to a lot of meetings and just like did that whole thing, and nothing I was doing was calming it down, man. And I was driving, like I said, I was driving to a meeting one day, and the thought came into my head, maybe alcohol will work again. And I don't know, it was almost like somebody came into my car, took over the steering wheel, and said, we're going, man. And I had absolutely no choice of doing it. I even called, because the thought came into my head. It turned into an obsession, and it was like I had absolutely nothing. I had nothing, no fight in me. It was like I was going through the ringer once again. And I remember I called my buddy, the buddy that hooked me up with my now sponsor, and I told him, I was like, you know, Matt, like, I think I'm going out, man. And he's like, what? You know, what are you doing, dude? I was like, I don't know, man, but I think I'm going out, you know? And I mean, at that point, dude, there's nothing anybody could have said that would have pulled me back. And I fully believe that, man. Because I remember that first sponsor said to me, there will be a time where the only thing between you and that drink is a relationship with God. And you better have one, because if you don't, you're drinking again. Because you're an alcoholic, like I'm an alcoholic, a hopeless variety alcoholic. I have absolutely no choice in the power of drink. And that experience confirmed that. And I remember one of the thoughts I had when I went back out that day, it was like, well, you know, if alcohol doesn't work, I'll just come back to AA tomorrow, you know? So I got drug around by alcohol for the next 2 years, you know? Man, and I remember, like, same thing. Let me just try to switch it up a little bit more. And we were having a conversation earlier. Like, if there's anything, the worst thing that I have probably done to the people around me is build their hope up. Like I said, I had about a little under a year of sobriety. And I built their hope up, like, yeah, Ant's like finally doing good. Like, oh my God, you know, he's, you know, we thought he would never do good. And now he's like finally doing good. He's doing his AA stuff, whatever he's doing in there. And then I come home and I just rip the rug out from every single one of them. I rip the rug out from every single one of them. I remember talking to my buddy, you know, and my parents gave me like this coin thing, I guess, on my like 1 year anniversary. And I was lit. I was lit, man. And the shame and guilt that that brought on, man, and they knew. They knew. I mean, looking back, it was like, man. And I often say, I mean, that is, after all, you know, all the materialistic damage I've done and stuff like that, that is probably the worst thing that I've ever done, is build these people's hopes and then just rip the rug out from every single one of them. And like I said, man, I went on this bender, this 2 year bender, with the thought every single day of, you know, I thought I could just go back to AA. You know, I could just go back to AA. You know, if it gets really bad, I'll go back to AA. Well, it got really bad, and I couldn't even get back to AA. You know, I didn't even have the choice of going back to AA. You know, we were joking like earlier about like you come in, like I experienced this relief through the step work and the program of recovery that we have written in our textbook, and then I go back out, and then it's like I was living in an apartment down in Wildwood. You know, and I would wake up, you know, and like I would just crack the window open, and it would be in the middle of the summer, and I would see these people walking down to the beach. It was like their, you know, moms and dads with their kids, and I would crack this blind open, and just I just wanted to get back to that so bad, you know. I was like, how did I get here once again? How did I get to this spot once again, you know? And I remember, like, the thoughts would just be like, go back to AA, and like, go, it worked, go back to AA, and you see all these people. They became, you know, became your friends and everything. Like, it was still working, you know. And I would crack these blinds open, and I would just start crying, you know, because I couldn't take it. I couldn't take it, you know. And it gets to the point where it's like, if I don't wake up tomorrow, cool. That would end all this, maybe. Because that's what I do. Like I said, I pack my bags and leave. So I know that I'm going to cause the people around me a lot of pain. I'm very aware of that. So what I do, I pack my bags and I leave. So we moved down shore. That was a great idea, you know. Great sobriety then. But so that's what I did. And like I said, I mean, through divine intervention, I found my way back into Alcoholics Anonymous. I got into this rehab because a friend of a friend worked there, and I had my insurance maxed out and all this. And, you know, I remember I got back into that rehab, and I did what I usually do. I remember I was laying in bed one day, and I was just like, the thought hit me one day when I was laying in bed, and I didn't even say anything. I put my shoes on and I walked out the front door. I said nothing to nobody. I would see people like stare, like signing like AMA papers. I was like, why you waste all the time doing that? I just walk out the front door, you know? And that's what I did. I put my shoes on, I walked on the front door, and I got on a train, and I left. And I curled up in a ball in the back of the train. I had no money, no nothing. I just went, you know? And I found myself down Center City, and I remember I was trying to call everybody that owed me money. Yeah. They didn't pay, you know. They still owe me money. But, you know, and the only person that answered was my father. And I remember I called my father, and I remember I heard my mom's voice at the time. And I remember I called my mom. She's like, you know, how's rehab going? I was like, you know, not in rehab anymore. Downtown, you know. And she was about to hang the phone up. And you know, my dad, I don't know, through the vine, I don't know. Like, I try to figure out these set of circumstances that led me into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then what I've come to find out is it really doesn't matter. I mean, all I know is God is extremely prevalent in every single one of these circumstances that has led me into these rooms, you know. But I remember he came and picked me up, and I was in tears, man, because I didn't want to do it anymore. And I knew that I was going to do it. That I hate being at that spot, man. And I know people have been at that spot. I couldn't stand living the way I was living anymore, but I couldn't fathom living any other type of lifestyle. Sobriety, I couldn't concede it. I didn't know how these people were doing it. And my ideas was I tried AA. I really half-assed AA is what I did. And then AA doesn't work for me. I tried that one time. So I know what that's going to give me if I go back there. You know, it's just a matter of time. I'll be in and out. But I remember we were sitting down at the end of Linden Avenue at the river down there, and I don't know what happened. It just broke, man. I couldn't take it anymore. I remember I just started bawling. I was like, Dad, I know what I need to do, and I went back. I went back, and, you know, I remember I called my sponsor the next day, and, you know, he knew. I don't know if he could hear it in my voice, but this whole time, like, I would call him randomly. And, like, we would meet up here and there, like, we'd meet. And then I'd go back out, and then we'd meet, and then I would go back out, you know. So, you know, that it was incredible that man was there. That entire, you know, merry-go-round of in and out, in and out, in and out, that man was there the whole time. You know, he would always tell me, you know, he's like, hey, you can go back out, but I'll be here if you make it back. And it was always an if. It was always an if. And he was there when I finally made it back. And that was powerful, man. So, you know, I called him, you know, and we just started doing a deal, you know. And I don't know, like, what I've come to find in AA this time is my, like, I have this contrast of what my life was like before, and especially what my life was like in Alcoholics Anonymous before. And for a guy like me, I need to be absolutely 100% involved in, like it says, half measures avail us nothing. I mean, I experienced what half measures will give me. I experienced what doing a fourth and fifth step was like. Made a couple amends. 10, no, I'm not going to do that prayer meditation, like a 30-second prayer morning, definitely not at night. Helping guys, nah, I go to meetings, you know. And I experienced what these half measures were like. And for a guy like me, maybe I needed that experience, I don't know. But I knew coming back into the rooms this time that I had to be all in. You know, I had to be all in. And that's what happened, you know. And we just got to work, man. Thank God, you know, thank God for that, man. Thank God he was armed with the facts about alcoholism, and he sat me down, you know, and he did this, and I don't know what happened. I mean, through a set of circumstances, like I was living in a recovery house, and I borrowed money off a guy. I stole money off a guy. I was living in a recovery house, and I was politely asked to leave there, and I remember that was a fun phone call to my mom, you know. I was like, Ma, you know, I got asked to leave. I think I can come stay with you, you know? And she's like, what? You know, and through a set of circumstances, I found myself back at my parents' house. And I remember moving back in there because, you know, the amends that I've made to them at the beginning, it was like, I remember I made these amends to them, and through whatever reason, they were gracious enough because they had asked me to leave a long time ago, and they were very stern in their whatever, just not letting me come back, you know, and thank God they did. But, you know, they let me come back and I was able to move, and I had no idea why. But I'm very aware of why. I mean, there was a lot of people that needed help, and there still is a lot of people that need help, you know, where I moved back to. But I don't know. I mean, like, what the steps, whatever. I mean, what it's like now, I mean, backtrack all the way to the beginning. My home group is at a place called Glenside, you know, Glenside Big Book Breakdown. My sponsor goes there, my grand sponsor goes there, guys I sponsor go there, guys that they sponsor go there, and it is absolutely a blessing, you know, because AA, I mean, if I've come to find, like, if AA feels like work, you know, to you, you might be doing it wrong, you really might, because, I mean, AA is absolutely something that I am completely in love with, I mean, whatever it may be, because I have a lot of respect for this fellowship, you know. I really believe that this is one of the most sacred places on earth, and I treat it as that. I treated it as that. My sponsor is very he's told me in very more kindly ways, or whatever you want to call it. But I treat the fellowship with the respect that it deserves. You know, I don't come in here. I don't sit on my phone the whole meeting. When I'm in a meeting, I sit down for the whole hour and I just sit and I listen. And like I said, I give it the respect it deserves. Because I mean, it does. It irks me sometimes with people. I mean, because this fellowship means so much to me, man. It really does. It really does, because it has given me a life that I, like I said, I mean, I don't think, like, obviously, I mean, through my actions, I probably shouldn't be here, but I am. And me even saying I shouldn't be here, that's just questioning God's will to begin with. So, I mean, God's intentions was always for me to be here. I just finally conceded that I was done or whatever. But I mean, this fellowship has absolutely saved my life. This program has absolutely saved my life. And it's because of the action that I take on a continuous basis within Alcoholics Anonymous. I've experienced what it's like to sit in Alcoholics Anonymous and be absolutely so filled with pride and ego and pain and suffering, and this exterior that everything is okay and it's not, you know, and that is a painful spot for me to be, you know, because I the first 6 months of my sobriety, or I don't even really know what it was. I remember I was going to all these meetings and stuff, and these people were like talking really good, and I was just like, I don't know, I'm going to say what they say, and they sound pretty good, and I would just repeat it, you know. I didn't feel any of it, you know. I was going through the process, you know, and I remember, like, I was driving to a meeting with my sponsor one night, and I asked him, like, Larry, like, well, these people that talk about, like, spiritual experiences and stuff, like, how do you know, like, you've had one, man? And he just gave me, like, the Sandy Beach line, like, man, when you have this desire to start helping other people, then you know you're probably on the right track. And I started to experience that. I started to experience, because I found a solution for what was finally wrong, for, you know, what I was afflicted with, I guess, whatever you want to call it. And I found a solution, and I quickly went on a crusade to let everybody know what the solution was, and how they were doing it wrong, and you need to do it this way. But I don't know. I remember I had that conversation with him, and he said something to me like, said, Aunt, like, I could sit here and look you in the eye and tell you that I have absolutely no intention to ever drink again. Can you say the same thing? Can you say the same thing that you're seeking permanent sobriety on a daily basis? Can you say that? I mean, you look at the history, and Dr. Bob's history, it's riddled with that. What these guys sought was permanent sobriety, you know? And I remember from the first couple of months, that's not what I was looking for. I don't know. I was just taking a set of taking direction and a set of actions that I was pretty certain probably wouldn't work, but it ended up working out. So, and I remember I had like this idea. I was like, because I started having this psychic change or whatever you want to call it, you know, spiritual experience. And I was like, maybe I can like join the Peace Corps now. And like, if I go to a different country, I can probably drink there. Like, I'll still be in service. You know, it's pretty spiritual, the Peace Corps, and I'll be able to like control my drinking, you know? And like, I would have these thoughts, and I was like, absolutely insane, you know. And the crazy thing, like I would play with these thoughts, and like then I was like, I looked it up, and it was like, yeah, you need a college degree, and I don't have that. It's in the works, but I was like, yeah, that's out of the picture. But then through a series of conversations that I had with my sponsor, I mean, it came to a point where I realized that was all in. I was out of ideas. I mean, that idea that I could drink like other people, it was smashed. It had to be. For me to become all in with this program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the idea that I could ever drink like a normal person again has to be smashed. Has to be. Because if it isn't, I mean, it just, I start playing with that first step again. Am I really an alcoholic? You know, I firmly believe that really every action I take within Alcoholics Anonymous is a direct result of how powerless I think or don't think I am over alcohol. You know, if I don't think I'm powerless over alcohol, I'm really not going to take any actions within Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm definitely not going to make amends and go sponsor people. But I remember I sat down with my sponsor, and you know, he was very, very blunt with me. Thank God he was. You know, he's very blunt with me, and he pointed out all this selfishness and the self-centeredness that I suffer from, or that I created in my life. And I finally, like I said, through a series of conversations, was convinced that I was absolutely powerless over alcohol. And from that moment on, I became all in with Alcoholics Anonymous. I realized what it took for me to live this peaceful, happy, content life on a daily basis. And every action I take, I mean, yes, I take actions in Alcoholics Anonymous because I fully conceded that I am absolutely powerless over alcohol, and I have absolutely no choice to drink. I mean, my two choices really on a daily basis when I wake up are either not really. I have one choice, really. I mean, this choice of to grow spiritually or not. I mean, if I'm growing spiritually, then I don't drink. You know, that's the result of that. If I'm growing spirit, and then if I'm not, I drink. It's my default. You know, that's what I go back to. So that's what I do. You know, I become, like I said, all in with the Alcoholics Anonymous, and I jump in with everything I got, and you know, through that, you know, through this whatever you want to call it, I mean, just complete abandonness to this program, I've experienced a peace and happiness, like it says, a new peace and a new happiness that I was fully convinced that was not available on this earth. And I was fully convinced that I was never going to be able to find that. And I found it within Alcoholics Anonymous because of the direct result of the actions that I took within Alcoholics Anonymous. Like I said, I sat around for a long time and I experienced a miracle. Like, wait for the miracle to happen. I'm like, all right, I'm just going to wait, you know. So maybe it'll, like, smack me in the face or something. I don't know, you know. But, and then, like I said, I sponsor a lot of guys and I get to see that, you know, I get to see that miracle happen. I'll wrap it up with this. I mean, some of the best things I get to see is with an Alcoholics Anonymous is my home group. Like, I love my home group, man. I really do. It's such a relief going there. Every Tuesday night at 7:30, I mean. And one of the coolest things is, like, I get to see guys come in, and then they sometimes get, you know, sometimes I sponsor them, other guys in the group sponsor them, but whatever the case may be, sometimes one of the coolest things, though, is I get to see, like, friends of mine, they sponsor other guys, and I get to see the transformation happen through them, and I have nothing to do with it, right? Because I'd be lying to you if I didn't sit here and say sometimes, like, when I sponsor guys and I'm like, they do good, I'm like, yeah, I had a part in that, you know. I'd be lying, you know, I really would, like. But it's the ego just manifests in every area of my life. So, but that is one of the most truest forms that I get to see it in, is when I see something like one of my friends or whatever the case may be, you know, come with a new guy. A new guy will come into the home group and then they go through the process because I got nothing to do with that one. You know, that's all them. It's absolutely a blessing that I'm able to witness that. So, I mean, I'm very blessed as to what my life has become. I mean, I have a job that I've had for like three consecutive years or something like that. I mean, I used to flounder around from jobs every couple months, you know, and then get resentments because they fire me because I was stealing money. But you know, I've had this consecutive growth process throughout Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's funny. It's like the higher you go, and I mean, the more you're able to see. I mean, that's really the truth. I mean, and that's been my life. I mean, I've been able to grow, keep continuously growing spiritually. And the more I grow spiritually, the more I'm able to see of my life. I mean, it's true in any aspect, in reality or whatever you want to call it. I mean, the higher you literally go, you're able to see more. And through this growth process of Alcoholics Anonymous and continuing to grow within Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm able to see more. I'm able to see relationships grow in my life. I'm able to have the only thing I wanted from when I was a kid is just be a brother. You know, I have an 18-year-old brother, and just in the last 3 years, we just started having a real relationship. And that's one of the coolest things, man. That is a direct result of the power of God working within my life in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm able to be a member of my family today as a direct result of the actions that I've taken within this fellowship. You know, for that, I'm truly grateful. So, you know, it's my first time up here, so thanks for the hospitality of the group. Thanks.